Amen. You can have a seat. And kids, you can see you later. Thank you, Leah, for that time of worship. Good morning, everybody. If I haven't met you yet, my name is Michael, pastor here at The Dwelling. It's good to be with you. And happy Father's Day to all the dads. We have a gift for you. In the back, in the very back, there's a sign that says Happy Father's Day. Right behind that, Moses is displaying them right now. He's our root beer model back there. We got some dad's root beer because why not, right? So feel free to grab one of those or two of those on your way out. That's just our little token to say, you know, we celebrate and honor the role of dads and, of course, moms as well. But today is Father's Day, and so one of the things that we like to be reminded of is the fact that I know not everybody always has a great experience with, you know, maybe their own father. Some of us do, and some of us don't. And either way, our heart is that you would know that you have a Father in heaven who is perfect and is loving and sees you and is here for you, and He is the ultimate caretaker for us, and that is a good thing, and so that is what we celebrate. But regardless of that, if you're new with us, if this is your first time, we are glad you're here checking things out. We have a gift for you as well. We just love gifts. It's kind of funny, gifts and food, that's like a thing. But out at the front when you walked in, there is a gift out there. You can take that just as our token to say we're glad you're here checking things out and with us this morning. And then another piece of this that we talk about every week is our time of giving. We like to put this out there every single week, partly because if you call The Dwelling home, it is an act of worship, and we believe that. That every time we come here, not just to sing, but we give God all of our lives. And part of that is also with our finances and trusting God with that. So you can see the ways to do that if you so feel so compelled to do so. And then last but not least, I think I actually jumped the gun on this. It's okay. We would love to connect with you one way or another, whether that's because you're new or you want prayer. We don't have the connect cards on the seats, but they are on the table over there. If you want to fill one of those out, put that in the joy box. We would love to be in contact with you during the week just to see how we can be praying for you or anything like that. So I'm doing the reading of the word this morning. So if you will stand with me, if you're willing and able, we are in a series called The Kingdom Life. We are journeying through the Sermon on the Mount, and so we are neck deep in this today. So we're reading out of Matthew 5, verses 38 to 42, and it says this: "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. For if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. If anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go to 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. All right, you can have a seat. Thank you for doing that. And we stand every week for the reading of the word because we honor the word and believe that it is our foundation, and it is our authority, and it is relevant for our lives today, and has a lot of good things to say, including the Sermon on the Mount. And so we're diving into this next section, but it's probably come to no surprise for many of you if you've gotten to know me over the last few months, because I've kind of referenced this quite a bit, but I love movies. I just love movies. It's kind of a funny thing. My wife and I, like, I will always reference movies, and she doesn't know what I'm talking about, and it's like, you know, it's fine. But one of the movies, trilogies in particular, that I love is Back to the Future. I don't know if you've ever seen those movies. We probably could get into debate on which ones are good and which ones aren't as good, or which one you prefer. I like them all for different reasons. I like all three of them. For many reasons, right? One, because you get so caught up in the storyline, in the character development. You know, Michael J. Fox was a great actor. You know, he obviously is going through his health stuff, but he was at his prime, right, at this time. And one scenario in particular that I was so fascinated with was Marty McFly's, like, just he was bound and determined, right, to go back and help his dad, George McFly, kind of correct the scenario that he had with Biff Tannen, right? This bully that was in his life. And ultimately, this bully, Biff Tannen, right, he came in and he took over. He ended up even, I believe, marrying Marty's mom, and because George didn't stand up to him. And so Marty goes back, right, and he's like, George, you got to do this, right? You got to stand up to this guy, and you got to take him out, right? That was his mindset. It was like, the only way to solve the problem here is for you to just smack him in the face and just move on, right? Because that was going to stun him. So we see this transpire, right, where Marty goes back, and they're going to the prom, I think it was, and George confronts Biff, and he's at this crossroads, right, in this scenario, where either he's going to buckle and cower and walk away, or he's going to stand up to Biff, and he's going to clench his fist, and he's going to knock him out. And we see that he obviously does that, right? He knocks him out. He gets this, like, rage inside of him all of a sudden, and he just swings, and he takes Biff out, and he does this, like, 360 dramatic spin, obviously. It's acting. But then all of a sudden, Marty's mom, like, realizes, oh, my gosh, George, you're so amazing. And then, like, you know, happily ever after, right? So I only bring that up because that's movies. That's theater, right? If only that were reality for us today, that the method of fighting and getting angry and resorting to violence is going to counter and solve the problem of somebody else who is being aggressive towards you. I think oftentimes when we get into this state of conflict, it's two scenarios, right? It's either fight or flight. It's either we walk away from it, or we stay silent and we retreat, or we aggress and we lash out and we get aggressive and maybe even get violent and we fight, right? In these two scenarios. But unfortunately, those two scenarios in their extremes especially don't really solve the problem like we want it to. They just don't. And that is not a new struggle. That's not a struggle for us. That's something that has been happening for centuries, right? Jesus is now speaking to his audience, and we've been going through the Sermon on the Mount, which basically takes a look at what the kingdom life is all about. Like, if you want to understand God and his kingdom, then you look at the Sermon on the Mount. And he goes through these six case studies that really capture the heart and the essence of some of the deepest personal struggles that we have as human beings. We've talked about lust. We've talked about keeping our word, right? We've talked about anger, and now we're talking about this idea of retaliation and revenge in our lives, like the idea that just we want justice, right? We want to take matters into our own hands at times, and that's where we're at today. And so in this first verse, Jesus says this. He says, you have heard it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Now, these six case studies, he does this in every single one where he says, you have heard it was said. And then the next verse, he's going to say, but I say to you. It's not that Jesus is basically doing away with the Old Testament and the law, but he's kind of taking it one step further and he's clarifying really what it is all about. But in this case, he is actually about to do something a little different. He is actually going to kind of set it aside for a minute. Not because it's wrong or because he's negating the Old Testament, but he wants to set it aside because the whole intention of this law that he's about to reference is kind of served its purpose. And so he says, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Now, allow me for a couple minutes here to just kind of nerd out on you for a second, okay? And kind of dig into the trenches of what he's getting at here. So when he says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and we've probably heard that phrase before, whether you've been a part of the church for a long time or not, he is referencing not just one specific command, but he's actually referencing a bunch of different things that are in the Old Testament. So Exodus 21, 23, 24, it says this, But if there is harm, then you shall pay life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Again, in Leviticus 24, 19, 20, it says, if anyone injures his neighbor as he has done, it shall be done to him. Fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, whatever injury he has given, a person shall be given to him. And then Deuteronomy 19, it says, a single witness shall not suffice against a person for any crime or for any wrong in connection with any offense that he has committed. Only on one evidence of two witnesses or of three witnesses shall a charge be established. And this is really what he's getting at here. The judges shall inquire diligently, and if the witness is a false witness and has accused his brother falsely, then you shall do to him as he had meant to do to his brother. So you shall purge the evil from your midst, and the rest shall hear and fear, and shall never again commit any such evil among you. For your eye shall not pity, it shall be life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. So face value, it looks like Jesus is calling out like this super egregious, like, brutality that is within the law that the Jewish people were to follow. And that's actually not the case. I know face value, it might seem this way, but it was actually not designed to foster vengeance and hostility. In fact, the law actually forbade that. What is happening here is this is actually part of their civil law that God instituted because there was so much brutality. There was so much brutality where people would be wronged and immediately they would just be like, you know what? I'm going to go take this guy out because I don't know the way he looked at me, right? Or he took a sheep. He took one of my sheep, so I'm going to go kill his wife. And it was so, so ridiculous and so distorted that God established the law so that there would be some semblance of equity when it came to the judicial system within their culture. So it wasn't so much about brutality as it was, okay, something happened here, and so the penalty and the consequence for that action is going to be equally measured towards what happened. And so in actuality, it was designed to create order. It was designed to create this law and order within the people of God. And through this process, people were then basically liberated from the need and the desire to seek revenge or to seek their own justice for being wronged in that situation. And so we see in Leviticus 19, 18, it's not going to be on the screen, but God says, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against one of your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Just like Mandalorian last week we talked about, this is the way, right? So God is not trying to say like, hey, just all bets are off, you know, if you feel like you've been wronged, but he's saying, no, there's an equity to this. There is an ethical standard to this way of living. But here's the problem. A law that was designed to punish fairly and bring this equity and limit retaliation really didn't do its job. Because what happened was people started to kind of find the loopholes in the system, right? They started to bend the rules, if you will, and use this as justification for their vindictiveness. They actually distorted the law. And what was most prevalent for them is they recognized they were living within a culture where they really didn't have many rights as citizens, right? They were under the oppressive rule of Rome, which viewed them basically as second-class citizens, so they didn't have nearly as many rights as Romans. And so the Roman citizens would take advantage of the Jews. And you can imagine in this situation that the Jewish people are thinking to themselves, like, what gives? Like, we don't have any say here. We have no freedom. I got to take matters into my own hands. Like, it is up to me now to seek justice for when I am wronged. And that's what we were working with here. That's the backdrop against what Jesus is speaking towards in this moment. And so he says, you have heard it was said, and I'm not going to say it's wrong, an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, right? Because there was a time and place for that. But the problem is, I still know your heart. I still know what is deep down in your hearts. And so he says, but I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. Well, that's a weird phrase, Jesus. What do you mean by that? Jesus is setting aside that law for a moment because he's trying to get deep to the heart, right? He always speaks to what is beneath the surface. And that is key for us this morning. Is that's almost the baseline for this whole entire case study that we've been going through, is that Jesus is always looking to get deep beneath the surface of what is in our hearts. Not so much just the situations on the surface, but the matters that we are struggling with in our souls. And that's a big question for us this morning. Is there something within your soul, in your own heart right now, that you're ignoring or just putting off to the side, that you're not willing to allow God to do a work on? And maybe, just maybe, this morning he wants to do just that. When Jesus says, do not resist the evil one, or the one that is evil, that word resist is antisemi, which I probably butchered that, that's fine. And I think it still does, it gives it a bad kind of description there, because when you translate into the English, resist just kind of means like this, you know, being on the defensive, right? Or this passive expression. But really what it means is to set oneself against the offending person. It's almost like we're taking this creative approach. We're not being aggressive and violent, but we're not also cowering and buckling under the pressures of what is being done to us in those situations. But it is not our job, Jesus says, in that moment to take matters into our own hands. How often do we see that this vengeful spirit doesn't produce what we want it to? Right? When we seek revenge or justice ourselves, oftentimes like we might scratch an itch for a minute and it might make us feel good in that moment, but very rarely does it actually do what we want it to do to satisfy what is going on in that situation, right? Because violence oftentimes begets more violence. That's the truth here. It's a vicious lie and a vicious cycle, right? So if I'm being wronged or I've been aggressed, if I counter with the same or more force, what is likely to happen? It's going to be reciprocated again with more or greater force. Yeah, greater force, right? And it just keeps going. It's a vicious cycle. And honestly, that's what the problem is, what we have with our culture today, right? When we see all these wars happening, right? In our culture, in our world, right? A nation responds when somebody aggresses their nation, says, well, guess what? You done wrong. We're about to respond with equal or greater force because of what happened. It's never equitable in those situations. The rules of war aren't really a thing if we think about it. But on a personal level, as followers of Jesus, and this is really what it comes down for us today, our responsibility is not to take justice into our own hands. If anything, it is to reverse the dynamic of our situation from taking to giving. And that's the key thing Jesus is going to be speaking into this morning, is it's going from this mindset of taking to giving. The evil person, right? The person who has evil in their hearts, their desire is to take, right? When we're aggressing, it's to take. But we are to give, Jesus says, give to the offender by serving him or her. And that is scandalous if you think about it. Because his listeners are thinking to themselves, we're being oppressed by Rome right now. We have no say. And you want me to give? You want me to serve? You want me to love out of that? And he's like, yeah. Our default mode should be that of love. And that's really what he's getting at today. Well, not today. 2,000 years ago. But for us today. Our default mode should be that of love, not retribution. Our filter, when we've been wronged, is it to get back at them? Is it to seek justice, or is it to live in this mode of love, sacrificial love? And you know, maybe you're thinking, like, Michael, you sound like a hippie right now. I don't know. You sound like just make love, not war. Like, Are we in the 60s again? That's not exactly what I'm saying. But it's also not what I'm not saying. I think ultimately, we have to remind ourselves that if we harbor a vengeful spirit towards people, not only is that going to wreak havoc for them, it's also going to wreak havoc for us as well. Maybe even more so. Because Jesus is telling us that when that spirit resides inside of us, it takes over. It takes over and it breaks things down in our spirit to where maybe we don't even have the capacity anymore to love like Jesus. Romans 12, Paul echoed this. He said in Romans 12, 17 to 21, do not repay anyone evil for evil, but be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, and this is key, as far as it depends on you. I love that he says that, because how many of us know that it's sometimes out of our control how people respond to us when we're trying to seek reconciliation or be kind and generous towards people? Some people receive it, some definitely don't, and that happens. So he says, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed them. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on their head. Do not overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. I love that. You will heap burning coals on their heads by being good and kind. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, many of us know who that is. He lived during the time of Nazi Germany and spoke out blatantly against the atrocities of Hitler and the Nazis, but was yet still a man that was preaching peace. And I think there's a good reason for that. He said this, evil will become powerless when it finds no opposing object, no resistance. And that was interesting when I was kind of marinating that for a while this week, was because I think there's some truth to that, right? Is it's almost like when there's evil, if we pour more gasoline on that fire with more violence and evil, it's just going to continue to go, and it's going to get bigger and bigger. And because evil needs resistance, if there's a violent resistance towards evil, it's going to continue in kind, or even more so. And so he's like, when we resist evil with the sense of peace, it's diffused. When we resist evil with love, with sacrificial love and generosity, evil is squelched. You know, we see this embodied so well with Jesus. Like, he doesn't just preach certain things, right? He lives it out, right? We see in Matthew 26 this beautiful picture where Jesus is with his disciples in the garden, and he's basically telling them, you guys need to prepare. I'm about to be arrested, and I'm about to die. And most of them didn't understand that. Like, whoa, Jesus, calm down. Time out. You're going to do what? You know? And Jesus is like, no, I'm going to go to my death. And we see this obviously come to fruition. Judas comes with the Roman guards and the Sanhedrin, right? And they come and they arrest Jesus. Jesus is just sitting there. He's not getting out his sword. And he's like, all right, I'm ready. You know, he's not doing any of that stuff. He's not resisting. In fact, he says some very powerful words to his followers. He says, put your sword back in its place. For all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you not think that I cannot call on my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen this way? I love this because I think what Jesus is trying to say to his disciples is that I am about to demonstrate to you exactly what I just said in Matthew 5. The whole eye for an eye, two for two thing is not working here. And is certainly not going to work in this specific situation. But I'm about to demonstrate to you what that really looks like to love sacrificially even against those who are wronging you and aggressing you. And what we see in this passage right before that, right, is it says one of Jesus' followers, which most people think it was Peter, because Peter was very impulsive and just had a temper at times. It says that he whipped out a sword and sliced the ear off of the high priest's servant. And I'm like, really? The guy who's there and has no choice? Come on. But he basically takes out his guy's the ear and slices it off. And that's what like almost sparked this kind of resistance against the guards. And Jesus is like, whoa, stop. And he actually, we see that he heals the man. He restores his ear. It's crazy. But Jesus knew violent resistance would actually have diverted the plan that God had for redemption if they were to continue with swords in that moment. And so what Jesus says next is actually quite interesting. He gives four examples or four illustrations that demonstrate what he is trying to say. And face value, they're really random, but we're going to break them down here. So the first one, he says, if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other cheek also. Now, we've probably heard that, right? I'm just going to turn the other cheek, right? As if that's some noble thing, right? That's not really what he was trying to say. But he's essentially saying something very provocative, because what would happen is if somebody was coming against you and they were standing in front of you, it says if somebody slaps you in your right cheek, which basically means they did a backhand, right? And backhanding somebody was very, very insulting in their culture with the honor shame culture that they lived in. It was painful, of course, but it was also tremendously insulting and degrading to the person that it was being done to. Their dignity in that moment was being assaulted, really. And so Jesus is sending a message. He's like, okay, so by turning the other cheek, it's not so much that, you know, that continued violence is good in this situation, but there's two things that you can do in this situation. If somebody backhands you, they're insulting you, you could do one of two things. You could do the George McFly and walk away, or you could do the other George McFly and hit him, right? But in that situation, what's going to happen? It's going to continue. It's not going to solve the problem. So instead, he almost says there's a third way. And it's like Jesus is getting really creative here and really genius. He says, okay, so you've been hit on the right when he's backhand you. What you do is you turn the other cheek. And what that's going to do is a couple things. At the very best, it's going to disarm that person, because it is so startling and so surprising that you would do so, that their aggression is now disarmed, and you have the opportunity in that moment to maybe have a conversation or build a bridge in that situation. But at the very least, maybe they don't, but at the very least, in that moment, you have done the job of restoring your dignity as a person. Because you on your own volition, in your own choice, you have decided to turn back and give him the other cheek. And maybe he takes it, maybe he doesn't. But nevertheless, in that moment, you have restored the dignity of yourself, but you've exposed the humanness of the situation, and potentially you might defuse the situation. The second, he says, is if anyone would sue you for your tunic, which is really weird, really random, right? Sue you for your tunic. Anybody else wearing a tunic here? No? Okay, just checking. Let him have your cloak as well. Anybody wearing a cloak? No. So obviously, face value, this doesn't make any sense to us. But that was actually a common garment for people in Jesus' day. It was usually, they didn't have, you know, underwear like we did, right? They wore a tunic, which was kind of like the undergarment. And they wore a cloak on the outside of that. It was kind of like a coat or a suit, if you will. And they had a belt. And then they would wear something on their heads. That was their outfit. That was like the majority of people. That was a very common scenario here. But Jesus is saying that if somebody takes you to court because you've wronged them and they sue you basically for what is inherently yours. So your cloak and your garment was yours. Like it was actually a sacred possession, because you probably only had one. Rarely did you have more than one. If you had two, you were rich. So he's basically insinuating that if somebody sues you to take the essence of who you are away from you, Like, here's how you should respond. Because not only was it the only thing you had, many people used that for when they went to sleep. It was used as a blanket. The cloak on the outside was taken off at night for bedtime. And they didn't have, you know, sheets like we did. They didn't have a comforter like we do. They had their cloak. And their cloak was their blanket. And in order to be not freeze at night, they needed that cloak. And so Jesus is insinuating here that somebody might sue you for your very existence. And in that moment, it's going to be so tempting to try to seek revenge in that moment. But he says, but I say to you, don't just give him your cloak or your tunic. Hand over your cloak as well. And you can imagine they're like, whoa, Jesus. You want me to, basically Jesus is kind of like, he's a jokester. I love this, right? He's like, if you're in court and you're going up against somebody else, take off your cloak and your tunic and just hand it to him. He says, you want this? He's basically saying, stand naked in front of the court, right? You want to talk about turning the tide, stopping them in their tracks, and like catching them off guard. Get naked. That's basically what he's saying. And hopefully in that moment, something might change in that scenario where you have diffused the violence in such a way. Maybe it exposes greed. Maybe it exposes corruption from that person. But somehow, by taking this creative approach, not retreating, not being violent, you will be able to diffuse the situation. And so that's why he says this. And actually, if we really want to get down to it, that passage we just read about Jesus being in the garden, Mark 14 says something very interesting at the very end. It says a young man, and this is as soon as Jesus is arrested, it says a young man wearing nothing but a linen garment was following Jesus. When they seized Jesus, he fled naked, leaving his garment behind. I'm not going to say this is actually what happened, but I believe almost like that man was listening to Jesus in Matthew 5 when he said to give him the cloak and the tunic, and he's like, oh, shoot, there's a situation here. I'm taking it all off. Here, you can have it. And I think he's running off because he's trying to obey Jesus in that scenario. I don't know for sure, but that's kind of what it looks like, is that this guy is taking Jesus literally to the heart on the situation, and he's putting these principles into practice. Don't quote me on that, but that's what it looks like. So that's the second thing. The third thing is this. He says, okay, if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Okay, well, what's the big deal about that, Jesus? Like, okay, I'll go with him 2 miles. But this was actually an ancient practice. This was a very common thing in the government especially, or military personnel, because what would be happening is the military would be in their troop. They would be marching, and they would get really tired and hot. And all they would have to do, they had the right as a Roman citizen to take off their pack, to take off anything that was load-bearing, and if they saw a Jewish citizen, without fail, they could be like, hey, come here. And they would have to come over, and if they said, here, you carry my pack, they were legally obligated in that moment. They could go to prison if they did not say yes, pick up the pack, and carry it 1 mile. 1 mile. That was it. They had to go 1 mile. We've heard that saying, right? Oh, they just go the extra mile. Like, so that's what Jesus is really getting at here. He's like, okay, yeah, you can get mad about that. Or, so again, you can fight or flight in that situation, or you can take that pack, put it on your back, and you can go that mile, and then once you get to that mile, you can take it off, but nothing's going to change. It's going to happen again, and it's going to happen again. Or you can be provocative, and you could take that pack, not only go that mile, you can go an extra mile. You can take it a whole nother mile, because what's going to happen in that moment is everyone's going to see you and be blown away by the fact that you were so generous with your time and your effort to take it an extra mile that everyone would be stopped in their tracks and be blown away by what you just did. Not only the Jews, but also the Romans. And just maybe that would create an opportunity for a conversation, or maybe an opportunity as that soldier's walking by you like, what are you doing? Why are you going more? And you could say something like, you know what? I'm just feeling generous today. I'm just feeling like I want to help you out. And maybe that can diffuse a situation and create opportunity for a conversation. You know, it's one of those things where Jesus is really trying to get us to the point of thinking creatively about how we engage people when it comes to our conflict, when it comes to the need for justice and reconciliation in our lives. It's not that he wants us to ignore it. It's also that he doesn't want us to be aggressive towards it. But how can we creatively engage in such a way that still communicates love and grace and generosity, yet not enabling the situation? The last one, he just kind of hits it home. He says, give to the one who begs. Give to the one who begs from you. Do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. Okay, Jesus, what are we talking about with this one? He now takes the focus off of the person that's aggressing us, and he's now putting the focus on us specifically. He's like, there's going to be people that come to you and are going to be in need. And in this day and age, it was often believed that if somebody was poor, or if somebody had a disease, right, or somebody was down on their luck, that was because something happened that they did and they got what they deserved. Like, it was this idea that, oh man, you got leprosy. What sin do you got today? That was the mindset. It was like, oh, you're down on your luck. You're trying to take out a loan. Like, what poor decision did you make that caused you to be in that situation? How many of us do that with people? Right? When they're in situations, when they're in need, or they're down on their luck, and we in our spirit, we may not say it, but in our spirit, we're like, what'd they do? Right? What'd they do? What sin did they commit? We may not say sin, but we may like, what poor choice did they make? We do that with people at times, right? But Jesus is calling that out. He's like, there is no room for people who are followers of Jesus to have that spirit of contempt towards other people. He says, if somebody begs, if somebody wants to borrow, be generous towards them. Because that is the spirit and the attitude that actually unlocks the kingdom of God in our lives. We can choose to break the chains of evil when we restore the dignity of those around us. That's what he's saying here. And I think the biggest point for us this morning is this. I don't know about you, but I long often for God to show up and break through and to reveal himself. And I think oftentimes he's waiting for us to take a step, a bold step, a provocative step even. And maybe it's when the power of the Spirit of God actually comes out in our lives is when we, through our generosity, through our kindness, and through the giving of ourselves to others, like, it's revealed. It's revealed. The kingdom life comes when our default goes from retribution to sacrificial service. So the question I want to leave you with this morning is this. Where is a vengeful spirit taking shape in your life today? Where is that happening? Or, and this isn't on the screen, but where is there a situation where you know you are being wronged and Jesus is calling you not to fight or flight, but he's calling you to creatively, with discerning of the Spirit, to engage in such a way that diffuses the situation? And this brings us all back to our beatitude that said, blessed are the peacemakers, right? Not the peacekeepers or the aggressors, but the peacemakers. Are we having the courage to make peace in those situations? We're going to go into a time of communion together. Rick's going to have the box over there of elements. If you want to grab those, they're there every week. We do communion here at the dwelling every single Sunday. It's no pressure, no obligation, but it's an invitation because it's another opportunity to just allow God to kind of minister to our hearts and do a work. And there's nothing magical about this. It's just Jesus tells us to do it, and we want to be obedient to that. He says, as often as you meet, do this together. And I think it's a beautiful thing that ties beautifully into our passage this morning is that, man, if anybody had the ability and the warrant to seek retribution or to implement the civil law of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, it was Jesus. And it would have been a lot more than an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, right? It would have been an entire body for an entire body. But instead, he willingly and quietly went to the cross and endured the cross, scorning its shame, so that you and I could be free, so that you and I could find life and be reconciled back to God. And that's the beauty of his grace that he demonstrated. And he said, so when we do this, we're remembering that together. So let's go ahead and take the wafer, bread, whatever you want to call it. In the same way, he took the cup when he was meeting with his disciples, and he passed it around. And you have to believe that as they were passing it around, like, it wasn't just this little plastic cup here. It was probably a goblet. It was pretty big. You know, it was a different type of juice. It was wine, right? So there was an essence to it. And every time they did this, you have to remember they were remembering this through the senses, right? And I think for us today, it's not just a ritual that we want to rush through, right? We want to spend some time just marinating on the fact of what Jesus' blood did for us. That when he died and shed his blood, he gave us forgiveness and reconciliation. That this not this cup, but you know, his blood satisfied the wrath of God that needed to be satisfied. And so let's go ahead and take this together and remember that. We're going to respond in song. And then afterwards, if you need prayer for anything, Teresa and I are going to be up here, and we would love to pray with you. But maybe I encourage you to just take this time to allow God to reveal in your spirit if there's any vengeful spirit within you, whether that's for a loved one or for whoever. You know, I'm not going to be the one to dictate who that is, but my hope and prayer is that you will at least open your heart to that. So let's pray. And then we'll go into that time together. God, thank you for this moment. Thank you for this place. Meet with us in this time, God, as we respond in song. May we not respond in kind when there's evil that's done to us. Help us to evaluate our own spirits, to see if there's any vengeful way in us. And help us to hand it over to you and set us free from that. We trust you with that. In Jesus' name, amen.